to the old me, scared and unseen. You're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
We're reconsidering everything right now. What is time post-COVID? What is truth in Trump's America? Is You've Got Mail secretly a movie about a creepy gaslighting stalker? We can't answer the first two questions, but we have opinions about the third. We on Hot and Bothered are revisiting romance movies of the past and asking, what were these movies teaching us? What did we not even realize they were teaching us? Hot and Bothered is me, Vanessa Zoltan, a pop culture critic and nice lady with opinions, and Hannah McGregor, a bona fide professor of media studies, loving love stories, and also just a little bit concerned. Come listen to Hot and Bothered.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Edna White. I am your host for Keeping It Real on Purpose. And today I am totally excited. But audience, you know I'm always excited about my guests. But this guest, I'm particularly excited about because it's a topic that I wanted to talk about for a long time. And I know you all have been asking me, but I'm going to introduce him and his name. And what he does, he's going to tell you what he does. But his name is Daniel Kelty. He is going to be talking to us today about how organized religion affects us mentally, our mental health. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I am so, like I told you pre-show, I'm really excited to have to be here with you. So tell us how you show up in the world.
Well, I am a licensed psychotherapist. I'm an independently licensed social worker in the state of Ohio with a supervision credential. And I operate my own private practice. It's a psychotherapy practice where I provide natural healing. Thank you very much. Out of my home. I love your question. How do you show up in the world? Because I wear different hats.
Great.
Yeah. I have a husband of 15 years. We have three beautiful children we've adopted. So I'm a dad, I'm a therapist, I'm a lot of things. I like to stay busy. So I also sit on the board of directors for a place called Camp Quest, which is a camp for children nationwide to promote critical thinking and natural healing.
Oh, I love it. So I don't think you wear a lot of hats. I think you have the skills. All those skills just work so well together. You don't have many hats. You don't have them. you just work in it. You know, That's all. I love
that's it. That's interesting you say that because I always tell people, you know, they said, what made you be a therapist or a social worker? And I said, you know, not to be cliche, but I really do think it's in your blood.
It's gotta be.
Once I learned what a therapist meant when I was little, I thought, my God, I've been doing this my whole life. This is just who I am. I could get paid for this. Are you serious?
Yes. I hope you're hearing that, audience. I hope you're hearing the fact, because I know we talk about this all the time. Some of our social workers, we had a big summit last year. Well, this past year, not last year. And right. The women were like, you know, I really wish I could get out on my own. Well, my sister did it because she was so tired. We live in New York. She was so tired of working in that industry because it was so hard for her to operate the way she needed to. And now I hear that you're doing it. So that encourages everyone. You're a social worker. Get out there and make your own. Show up in the world as a social worker, but do it for yourself. Mm-hmm. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. So now I want to get into what you have found out about organized and religion and how it affects us mentally.
I mean, personally, I've always had strong feelings about organized religion, in particular, evangelical fundamental practices. Okay. But as a professional, I also have found it troubling and disturbing how a lot of the fundamental faith-based belief systems really teach us to be shameful of ourselves. It promotes guilt and anxiety and for example, if you happen to identify within the LGBTQ community, that book of Leviticus is a scary book, right? As is Revelations and all
that
teach us to hate parts of ourselves, to fear parts of ourselves. And it's highly problematic, in my opinion. I've canceled people for many, many years. And, you know, many times, if it's not a really fundamental situation you're dealing with, you can back somebody out of negative thought. And what I mean by that is, like, if someone says, well, I think I'm going to go to hell or God hates me because I'm married to someone of a different race or some other rule within their system. And I might back them out of that by saying, you know, do you really think that a God who created the entire universe and is supposed to love and accept all of us unconditionally really cares about this issue you're bringing up? And many times they can be like, wow, that's an interesting thought. But sometimes, on very rare occasions, they'll say, yeah, I'm going straight to hell because I had sex before I got married. And that's firmly what I believe. And on those occasions, I just have to, you know, my empathy, my heart breaks. I'm like, this person genuinely believes that they're going to burn in hell for this very normal life circumstance.
Yeah.
And I find that troubling.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you that I was involved in religion from the age of 18 or 19 till about, I was in there 29 years. All my kids were born. Okay. I can tell you that it is the most sexist.
Yes.
It is the most diminishing to women. They diminish their bodies, they hate their bodies, hate who they are, hate how they look. And it does not give you any confidence whatsoever.
No.
I know for truth what you're saying. Now I want to back up and explain what fundamental is to our audience.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. When I say fundamentalism, I often use it synonymously with evangelical Christianity specifically. And what I mean by that is they're usually extremely conservative religions, and they have a lot of rules about what you can't do. And it's very, very harsh circumstances and harsh rules about basically participating in the natural world, and that in of itself being an evil thing. Things like women can't wear pants, they have to wear dresses, or they have to have their hair long. All those things that most people don't can see the fallacy in the logic. But for some cultures and some organized religions, they double down and they hold fast to it, and they have their own little bubbles that they exist in. And for a lot of people that, like I said, in the LGBT community or anyone really that doesn't identify in within that bubble, it's extraordinarily harmful. And even more problematic is it doesn't teach us how to have healthy relationships with people who believe and think differently than us.
Oh my. So I want to tell you one of the things. My daughter is gay. And so I knew, you know, we have discussed it and everything, but she loved to go to church, you know. Mm-hmm. They literally tried to pray that whatever was in her out. Like literally.
Wow.
And I saw that she said to me, she goes, "Mom, what's the difference? I don't need to go to church. What's the difference? I'm going to hell anyway." And I'm like, when I heard that, it hurt my heart so bad. Sure. And I had to say to myself, what have I done to my children? You know, you know, I had them going there because now I was abused, sexually abused from a young age, like 5 or 6 till about 14. And so I thought this was a safe place because the person I met, I loved her. She was, and she told me to go to counseling. So when she passed away in the ministry, I didn't get that again. The next person was like more, you know, like you said, double down on it. Right. So it was like we couldn't wear sandals. We couldn't, you know, we couldn't wear a skirt that was above our knee or on our knee. We couldn't, if we were large-breasted, we had to wear big shirts to cover that. It was like we were in shame most of the time.
Right.
And being someone who had shame on already, you know, now I got another coat of it, like you said, like another hat or whatever. But I had, like, it was covering me up. I was miserable. And it took me 29 years to kind of come out of it. So when I came out, and I'm glad you said that about the Bible, I ripped the Bible apart. And it doesn't mean what we think it means. When it says a lot of what it's saying, it's really, we take it in context of literal, their interpretation. But the words were not to be translated from Abrahamic law. It wasn't translated correctly to English. It's not able to be translated to English. So we got a bunch of somebody else's thoughts.
And it's so interesting how those thoughts translated into scriptures, translated into rules, and even more pragmatic, translated into law. That's where I have an issue.
Yes.
Believe what you want to believe. And if it inspires you, if it inspires you and makes you feel good about yourself, then you do you. Wonderful.
Yes.
But the minute that template gets applied to me and I'm seen as evil and not worthy of having children, not worthy of marrying, I got an issue with that.
And I would say the same thing to everyone. Well, why would the God that created this whole world, if he did, would have an ought again, and he created you, me, but then all of a sudden he didn't create that? I don't get it. Like, I don't think you talk about God and love, but you're talking God and hate. That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, it didn't make any sense to me. It was very, very damaging to me. And I guess I know I could see you sitting in church. Like, but doesn't make any sense, because I used to do that too. It doesn't make any sense. And I would raise my hand like it was in school. But what does that mean? You know?
You know, I'm just curious, how were you received when you questioned that?
Oh my gosh. Let me just tell you, I was treated like, who are you to ask such a question?
Exactly.
And I remember the first time, and I'll tell you, I was at a church one time, right? I know this is about you. I know this is about you. I got to get this.
You're fine. Go ahead. I'm enjoying it.
I was in this church and I was speaking. And so I don't know what made me look at this man. I was looking at him and I went over to him and I said to him, my spirit is telling you, stop doing what you do. And I just walked away from him. And I said in his ear, I didn't say it aloud. I said in his ear. So he was standing there and she was sitting there for a long time. So I said, you know, and I'm saying, why did I shoot her? You know, because sometimes you say, you know, but it was like I was drawn to him, right? Mm-hmm. Gets up and he says to me, he stands up and he says, I really love this woman here. So I was like, it was the first time I ever met him in my life, right?
Right.
So he says, I really love, she told me something that only God knew and she doesn't even know that he knew it. But and he confessed that he was watching pornography. He was the pastor of a church. So he says, I got to get this fixed. I can't do this. This is not right. You know, and I didn't know anything about the man ever. So, okay, so fast forward, I go back to church, to my home church. And it was nice. The guy, he really kept in touch with me, you know, and, you know, I told him, I said, I know resources to kind of help with that, you know, that. And we stayed connected. Went back to my church. And I was sat down with all the council to say, God doesn't talk to me. I was like, who the heck did? That's all I said. Well, who the heck did? I don't know this man from a hole in the wall, right? Right. And I said, I think it was kinetic. I think it was, we were meant to talk, you know, and whatever it was, I didn't know what it was. He's the one that confessed it. Well, you don't have the right to call him out on. It's like, wait, what? I never called him out on anything, you know, but there's no, I said, wow, did say to me that God doesn't talk to me. Well, who the heck? So that means I'm really low on the totem pole, right? Does that mean that?
Yeah, absolutely. If God loves you conditionally, under certain conditions.
Under certain conditions. So he doesn't talk to me, he doesn't direct me, doesn't guide me. Right. I have no common sense. I need you in front of me at all times.
Right.
So that's when I knew something, you know, I started to get to really, now I'm questioning, now I'm going crazy. I'm questioning everything. You know, just the fact of wearing earrings, I was questioning.
Like, oh my goodness.
What? It was so heavy. Right. I stopped having my kids come. I said, no, I got to finish out my obligation because it was an obligation there. But I was like, this is not good. It's not good. It took me years, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
10 years to get all of, and I know what you're talking about, the mental health.
Right.
It was bad. I couldn't look at a guy in the eyes. Like if I did, I was, you know, I was a harlot or Jezebel.
Sure.
One of them too. You know, I was one of them too, you know.
And what you're talking about is deconstruction. You're deconstructing what you thought to be true. There's a brilliant woman I follow on TikTok, actually, named Rachel Kane. I love her content. She's a humanistic, secular humanist. And she talks about how that these two different kinds of morality that people fall into. Basically, there's a horizontal reality, which is my moral system means that if I do harm to someone else around me, that's against my moral code.
Right.
Something that's you see in a lot of faith-based morality is a vertical top-down morality.
Yes.
Means everything that's good or right comes from up here. It comes from the top down. Right. And if my morality that's faith-based tells me God says I should do this thing, even if it harms someone close to me, that's okay.
Right.
Because my morality is vertical and not horizontal.
Right. And also in the religious order, if say my son is involved with the justice system. So when he went to jail, I was told not to go see him and cut him off. Now here it is, he's 16. And I'm like, well, who else is going to see about him? Like, you know, I'm his mother, you know, but to tell me that I was like, I didn't listen to it. Needless to say, I didn't listen. I was like, whatever, you say what you want to say about that one. How I do what I wanted to do.
Right.
But I was like, what? That doesn't sound like God. Like, doesn't sound like any of the stories, like the Good Samaritan picking up somebody, taking and paying their stay in the hotel. That doesn't sound like that. It doesn't sound like that at all. And I'm saying, wow.
And you know, you bring up a good point, because in your mind, you were saying, wait a minute, that's not my definition of my God. That's not how I understand love. And that may be very true. I think, you know, when I said my biggest issue was the fact that it's leaked into our legal system and has since the beginning.
Yes.
I mean, let's not be deceived. That very corrupt politicians get their position in Congress and in politics by using buzzwords like faith, Christian, Bible. Those are just buzzwords.
Yeah.
And
I hate it.
If the masses can see that and say, he must be a good person. There's an assumption, there's a very insidious assumption that in fact makes us good, and it doesn't.
It doesn't. I'm telling you, it doesn't. And then I had a car accident where I was in the hospital about 43 days, right? The whole side of me was crushed from the side. And so in my mind, okay, so I couldn't wear pants. I had to wear pants. I couldn't wear skirts. So I was had casts all over here, you know, and it was a hot mess. I was just, the first thing when I wake up from the coma, guess what I'm thinking? Not that I'm alive, but guess what I'm thinking?
What you're wearing.
You never guess.
What?
Nope. Where's my Bible?
Wow.
What? I was like, why am I thinking that? Like, here I am. I could see the cast. I couldn't talk because I was incubated. And I had two claps long. So I'm like, what, you know, I'm thinking, instead of looking at my body, being appreciative to be alive, I'm thinking, I need my Bible. They're not going to know that I am the chosen one or the evangelist if I don't have this Bible.
Right.
The second thing was my legs, they had to put a wedge in between my legs because my hips were broken. So both of them were broken. They had to, so they had to have my legs like this. So I was like, they was like, you have to get your daughter to bring you some jogging pants. Oh no. Oh yeah. You know, I couldn't even believe myself. I was like, I'm thinking like that. But I say that about this accident. This accident dismantled every thought that I had with religion. Every thought. And it was the best day of my life. Even though it was painful, it literally released me. I was able to see that some things weren't real. They were just made up.
Construct.
I wasn't going to, you know? And then why would I get into an accident if I'm the chosen? Why would I be in an accident?
Why would God allow that?
Why would I be in a coma? Why would I be hurting like this? Yeah. I'm the chosen. Right. So it disqualified everything that I thought about, you know? And that started me to dismantle all of that.
It's,
so tell me about faith. Can I take, because I know you're saying this word because I want to know this. And I know you know the answer. This faith, explain to me, why is it being taken so far with people?
Insofar as the faith being dysfunctional, you mean?
Yes.
I think historically we have kind of lost the ability to think critically. And you brought up the perfect example. When you challenged someone of authority in the church, you were really met with resistance and met with a lot of excuses and a lot of doctrine that invalidated your existence and invalidated your feelings. And so someone might say, wow, so it's not mine to question God's will. I better just shut up and mind my business and sit in the pew and listen to the sermon. I think if your faith serves you, like I said, good for you, you do you. And if that faith that makes you feel so good causes you to do good things for others and be a good person as you define it, then wonderful. That is an example of good faith. But when I'm held to the same standards of someone else's faith, or they see me as evil or see me as unworthy as their faith tells them to, that's where it becomes problematic.
Is religion a faith? Is there really faith in religion?
I think if you have a religion that actually teaches love and you have faith in something good, something bigger than yourself, and that serves you, wonderful. I think that there can be faith in that. But I think for a lot of religions that had become a bit more cult-like and a bit more fundamental, that faith is simply a buzzword that is used to control people and keep them in fear.
Gotcha. And, you know, so the good tell news us is, how, what?
I'm sorry, the good news is you can teach empathy. People that exist within a fundamental construct often lack empathy for people different than themselves. Because they've been taught that. You can unteach. You can unteach it.
That is so good.
Yeah.
Because, as I think about it, it's true.
Empathy, but the ability to understand and share the feelings of another person.
Right.
You can be taught that.
So wait. So where does people saying that their empaths come in at if you can be taught it?
I'm sorry?
Where do, if people say that they're empaths,
uh-huh.
and you could be taught empathy, how are they empaths? I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not an expert in the psychic abilities or being an empath per se, but yeah. I do think the emotion of empathy is something that is lacking. It's lacking.
Okay, the emotion of it.
Right. It's lacking in people's ability to see people different from themselves as equal or as worthy.
Okay. So they may have an emotional connection that they can feel that. Is that right?
Exactly.
More of a stronger connection. Got it. Okay.
It's like, for example, if there's a like hateful legislation passed that says transgender people can't serve in the military. They are denied that right to serve their country because of how they identify and who they are. And we say, yep, that's a good idea because we don't know any transgender people. It doesn't affect us personally. So we blindly follow it. But then if you know someone transgender, you're forced to look at your own dogma and forced to look at your own belief. And you're like, wait a minute. And you might, and hopefully you'll develop some empathy because it affects you personally.
Exactly. I think when you're young, you don't think like that. You know, you don't think like that. But as you get older and you're placed in certain experiences and situations, you're like, wow, I didn't. Because I'm one to ask questions. I'll ask a question in a minute. Like, tell me about, you know, tell me how this came about. I don't want to be like rude, but I really want to know. I honestly want to know. My mom calls me. She said, you've been my why kid since you were born. Everything was, why this? Why did they do that? You know, I was always very inquisitive because I wanted to know. I really wanted to know. Mm-hmm. And getting to know people, again, is a skill. And it really is a skill. And being so concerned and wanting to know, you know, and I did want to know. And learning from my daughter and asking these questions, because mom, you really really want to know. I was like, no, I want to know. You know, I want to know. Good. I really want to know. Because I never thought it was an abomination, because I just thought it was just part of who they are. That's who I thought. I never had any, you know, like a epiphany that, they're not supposed to be that way. I never had that. I never thought that. And it was never something that I adhered to. You know, when it was always spoke about, I'd never hear to that. That's not, I'd be like, no, that's not true. You know, so I was one of the people like, I'm not taking that.
And, you know, whether you believe in God or not, my question has always been, what kind of God would hate somebody for loving someone? Makes zero sense to me.
Exactly. And that's what I would say. Would you rather for them to be in a relationship with someone just because you say, and then it's all, everyone suffers? Is that what God wants? You know, think about that. No, does God really want that?
To zoom out for people like myself and like your daughter to have our rights voted on.
Yeah, by somebody else.
Our government. Like our government decides if we have rights or not.
Crazy. It is crazy. So talk about the weight of religion on mental health that you come from, as far as your dad or your clients. Talk about that, because that needs to be talked about.
Sure. Well, personally, I think I mentioned in my pre-show email to you that I was working on a book. And it's going to be called When the Bed Bugs Bite. And hopefully it'll be released next year. I did grow up in Ohio in a fairly fundamental, very fundamental religion, in the Southern Baptist Church. And
the Bible Belt.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Hellfire, brimstone. And my trauma within the Baptist Church of just being taught to hate everything that's not like you. And I remember asking my dad, you know, early on, like, why can't I wear jeans to church? Why does God care what I wear? Isn't my showing up enough? and asking those questions he had no answers to was a big problem in our relationship. And the more I got into the scripture, and I had read the Bible cover to cover, and I started to question things, I was stonewalled with things like, well, ours is not to question why. It is just God. We shouldn't question anything. So there was no asking those questions was not a welcomed thing. And we had
were you called the black sheep? Were you called the black sheep?
Oh yes, yeah. Yes. Very, very much.
I had that name too. I had the name too.
my parents are extremely homophobic. I think the problem is if we go back to when my dad first got into Christianity, he got into Christianity because my brother died when I was a toddler. And before my brother died, he was he gambled, he drank, he played poker, the whole stereotype. And then when my baby brother died, he couldn't make sense of it. And he jumped into the church because the church answered his questions. And then there was a reason for everything. And my personal opinion is I don't think he properly grieved the loss of my brother. Because he just turned his mind off and followed.
And that's the place you can turn it off at. You can literally turn your mind is not your own there. You can literally turn your mind off.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And from that, I think ever since then, he's been terrified to question anything and has just slipped into this really hateful dogma that I don't think he knows how to back out of.
Yeah. And it's hard to back out of that. It's when I was going through that, there were so many times I was crying and I'm like, they duped us. Like, this doesn't mean that, And when I really studied the part where I think it's in Leviticus as well, where the women should not go to war.
Yes.
And wear the war clothes.
Right.
And I'm going, they told us that this was what God said, that women needed to wear dresses and not pants. So I said, well, if that's true, if it's really true, I'm going to go on the side of Jesus. Didn't he have like one of those long dresses on? So how did pants come when Leviticus was written?
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
How did that happen? Yeah. So my pastor looked at me and he said, a pound of this and a pound of that. That has nothing to do with, because we were talking about Joyce Myers. And I was saying, I'd studied Leviticus. I mean, I broke it down and I was like, even with the part, there's the part you talk about with the angel being given, instead of the young girls. Right. That didn't even mean that. And I was like, that didn't even have nothing to do with homosexuals whatsoever. And when I'm saying all of this and I'm breaking it down, and he says to me, how do you know this? I said, I studied to show myself approved. A workman? Right. That's what I said to him. Right. I brought it back to him. That's what I studied this. And so he says, well, I'm going to go back to the women. They're not supposed to wear pants. Anything that puts their two legs into, you still have to step into. That's what he said. I said, well, we should be wearing underwear or stockings. So he was like, now you're just doing it. Like, he was so mad at me. I had to stop it. I said, I think I'm going to make this man have a heart attack. Because it didn't, I said, you see what I'm not trying to make you mad, but it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. There are some scholars that actually interpret the book of Leviticus when it talks about a man laying with another man should be stoned, interpreted as to be against pedophilia. That it was
trans. That's what it's about. Yes. Right.
And so if you look at that, and as along with that alone is, take that further and look at how the Catholic Church handles their priests who molest children. Do they excommunicate them immediately? No. They move them to a different parish. They move them all over so the victim is not have access to them, but they can go victimize somebody else.
Somebody else.
And historically, that's how the Catholic Church has handled it.
Let me just tell you, I went to Italy. And that big church they have there. So, of course, I'm from New York. I got shorts on. I didn't know that you couldn't go into this church and you had to cover up. So I'm going up the stairs, and so that everybody's looking at me. I'm like, so I had shorts on, and cut off jeans, and had the shirt went like showed all of this, and I'm just like, okay, that's what I'm doing. So it was hot. It was really hot. I think we went in February, April. It was very hot there, and so I'm going in to the guard. He says, "Ma'am, you can't come in here like that." I was like, "I have been bound for years. I am not about to put nothing over this body. And he was like, okay. He let me go in. And so when I'm looking, I'm going through the church. So I'm seeing these small people, you know, small cherubim-like people all over the place. Now they had a room where they had the women. If there was women scholars, they had their own room and they were locked in it. Then you had these eunuchs that were guarding them around. Like, so this right. is one room, they're in this room, and they're kept with, the eunuchs are castrated, and right. they guard the women, okay? Because they had a purpose, some of them had a weird purpose. But throughout the place, there's these grown men,
right?
And, you know, in my mind, I'm saying, this doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. You know, you got these small children, statues of small children, dogs right. and snakes, and everybody's naked. Now, this is the church, okay? Okay, and I'm going, why are you guys crying? Because this looks like pedophilia to me. Like, this is not, I didn't feel good with it. I was like, this is gross. So, of course, my big mouth says, what are those little closets for? Because they had these little closets, right? They were size, like an adult could fit in. I said, what are these closets for? When they told me that they go back there, you know, the priest can go in there and they're by themselves or whatever. But when I went in there, there's this little section that's not here, like where your face is, but it's down low.
Right.
And I'm going, this is disgusting.
Yeah.
it's really disgusting. And I'm going, oh,
sure.
It's right here in our faces, and when there people are crying, oh, this is so beautiful. No, this house is a house. This is a den of disgusting things that are going on. So I say all that to say what you said is right. It's so right. I had to learn that. It's so right. It's the truth. It's been going on for years, and it continues. It really continues.
It does. And think about how much money the Catholic Church has. And you know, if we were to tax all the churches, you could feed all the homeless people in the entire world.
Thank you.
Ten times over.
10 times over. Everyone would be fed. Everyone would have equal amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so when you talk about the mental anguish, I want to say, because it was mental anguish. I couldn't sleep because it was always bothering me. I was always thinking I was doing something. It was like walking a tightrope. You know, and there's no safety net on the bottom. And you have to walk with such ease and focus. And you were tense. It was horrible. It was the worst 29 years that I've ever spent. I was not happy at any time.
Safety net, but there's hell underneath it.
Right. If I did that, that would be hell. So the mental agonies, how do you turn... You know, for some of your clients, how do you help them, if you can, pivot some of that mental anguish that religion has really instilled in them?
Sure. And if someone is really attached to that faith system that they've been raised with, and it makes sense with their culture, I will ask them, how do you find joy and happiness within the context of your faith?
Okay.
And they might have logical answers, and we'll focus on that and how they define joy and they define peace. But some people that are just so tormented by this belief that they're a bad person, they're somehow an evil person, cannot find joy, peace, or acceptance within their belief system. And when that happens, I ask them, is there anything about this that you can question, that you will allow yourself to question?
That's good.
Because it's not my job to do, really. My job is to help support them and to help, you know, meet their clinical goals as they define them.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, one of the things that led me to get certified, which I'm currently working on, to be a specialist in religious trauma, was just that paradigm. Just that paradigm. Mm-hmm. Like, it's truth to them. I see it as trauma, but it's truth to them. And that's a very difficult thing to approach.
It was very hard for me. And one of the biggest things I had was about money, around money. Mm-hmm. That everything I did, I was not supposed to be paid for it. I couldn't touch it. I couldn't count it. If I had it, I would break out in hives. And I literally, I was freaking out. I would have issues about it. And if I worked, I had to give them, like, literally, I'm gonna tell you, I was giving money to the church where I should have been keeping it, because I thought I wasn't supposed to have it. Because, you know, all the misconception, and the one that sticks out a lot is they never tell you about the commas in the Bible. So everything's got a period. Mm. Whenever they try to rule you and control you, everything has a period. Right. So the love of money is the root of all evil. There's a comma, there's no period. And then the rest, there's more that goes along with that. Then before that root of all evil, there's something above that. We never heard that part. The only part we said, the love of money is the root of all evil. So then, oh God, I don't want to be evil. Like, you know, I don't want to be evil. I'm going to hell, you know, if I have money.
Then my question to the church is, if money is the root of all evil, then why do you want so much of it?
Thank you. Thank you. Why are you even passing around the basket?
Why do I have to tithe my 10%?
Right. Why are you even talking about tithes and offering? Why is the root of evil, but you got it? Mm-hmm. You know, what is that about? These are the questions I used to ask, but no matter what, like you said, it sinks. It gets in there.
Right.
And then the other thing, I was married twice. Mm-hmm. So they said, you would never be anything in church. You would never. First of all, you're a woman, number one. And number two, you're supposed to be married until you die, you know. But, you know, I'm like, do you think God wants me to be in a relationship that I'm being abused? I'm coming to church wearing glasses, being abused, hurt, you know. And not that I was, but still emotionally damaged. Yeah. You think God wants me to be like that? Mm-hmm. And to be in a marriage like that? I don't think so, you know. Right. So that alone said to me that you'll never be anything. When I left the church, I decided to leave and have a conversation with them and say, I'm leaving because there's something more that I need to do. You'll never be anything. That was the final word I heard. You'll never be anything.
Never. Wow. What a damaging statement.
It was horrible. And it made me vacillate every time I would try to, I was like, I got to go back because I'm never going to be anything. It's nothing going to ever work out. And I would vacillate. And I was troubled for months.
I'm sure.
Crying all the time. I had a friend who actually left the church the same time as I did because we were pretty close, but we didn't realize we were feeling the same things, you know?
The conversations need to happen.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about it until I was crying. And she's like, what's the matter? I was like, this is what's going on. She goes, oh my God. I'm going to the same thing. And so we started talking, and that's when so she's like, you got to come over and stay with me because I know that you're going through this. I was crying every day.
Right.
And here's a man that said that he was my father and told me I'd never be anything. So yet again, traumatized, you know, in my personal life.
Right.
Now I'm traumatized in the church. And the church did more damage than I can. I mean, food wise, I was. They were had me fasting, and I was sick all the time. It did so much damage to my body. I didn't know why, and so my doctor's like, "What are you doing?" Because he thought I was bulimic. He's like, "Are you? Are you?" He thought I was like, you know, practicing bulimia. I was like, no, they're telling me to fast 90 days without water or food. He said, what? So he's like, you have to have water. He's like,
yes.
I said, I'm not going to tell you to go against your religion. And I said, you have to eat something. You're working all day with nothing in your stomach. Pretty soon you're going to pass out. And I did. I passed out. Immediately that was not going to go over. Once I started getting sick, I was like, oh no, that we're not doing that.
Right.
We're not doing that. But those are ways that control you. And then after that, we do the fast. Now, why did we do this? And what did we change? What do we change as a group of people? Like if we're fasting, what are we changing? Who are we changing it for? You know, there was no answer, right? There was no answer.
Right.
I don't know how I rectified it. I honestly don't know. I just kept everything that I heard in my voice, my head, it wasn't my voice, but in my head, I said, no, is it true? You know, I started saying, is it true or is it something that I heard? And if it's something I heard, then I need to be able to go where I heard it from and quantify it with something that's true. You know what I'm saying? So that's right. That's the only way I did it. But there's so many people that are out there that you're so needed. Let me just tell you, you're so needed. There's not many people like me and my friend who kind of got away from it, you know, and like went cold turkey.
I mean, in some ways, it's when you've experienced trauma within the church, it can be a path to questioning it. But imagine people who don't experience direct trauma, but just choose to believe it, and they may never question it.
Endlessly. And
what you were describing just now, when you were talking about crying every day, is feeling like you were less than, is because you were operating within the construct of a vertical morality.
Yes.
Because God said you should fast. The fact that it did harm to you did not matter because God said you should.
Yeah. And I was asked, well, when is he going to tell me that I should be fasting?
Yeah, because I'm hungry, right?
I want to eat. I want to eat, you know? Right. And now think about this. Having your children go through it. That's one thing I didn't do. And I would say, no, I may believe this, but you guys are kids. Y'all gotta eat. And I would fix them food, but I would never put them through that. And I still didn't know, but like, even that example there, I should have said, wake up, Edna, you shouldn't be doing it either. But I didn't. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Is that part of the cult?
I think, when people use the word cult, people are like, oh gosh, my church is not a cult. We believe in love. But look at the context in which your church functions and look at how you define cult. Does your church encourage you to have relationships with people outside your faith system? Mm-hmm. No. Does your church encourage you to not partake in the world and not watch movies about Harry Potter and things
that's really good.
You perceive as witchcraft?
That's really
good. It's okay to question that stuff.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So what else could we, what are some things that we could look out for in our own lives with religion? As a young person, person, maybe an older person, because I've met some older people that have not experienced religion and just starting, because it's a group of people, we want to be around a group of people, we go towards that. So what could we look at to prevent this from going on?
That's a great question. Great question. Yeah. I think, and you point out one of the good things about the church community in that it is a societal, it's a community resource. It's where people get to socialize and feel accepted and feel part of a group.
Right.
And that feels good. That feels so good, accepted and told you're loved. And that's why people go back to that. But when you are told that you're not loved and that you should suffer, you should feel bad about yourself and feel bad about someone else, those are the red flags.
Okay.
So when you're taught and told that you should hate someone or not accept someone because they're different than you, is a huge red flag.
Yeah. And where you sit, for me, because I was in the Pentecostal apostolic, women had to sit in certain seats, men sat up top, and that even is so very sexist.
Yeah. Oh God.
So very sexist.
And if you were in that Pentecostal faith, and better than I probably, that, women can't even pray in the presence of a man, because they don't have that status in the church.
No.
So God loves you, but he doesn't want to hear from you.
And that's what I was saying earlier about that whole story about me going to church. He doesn't speak to me. What it meant is, you're a woman.
You're not worthy.
I'm not worthy to hear or connect with another person. What right do I have to say that I heard this, and I said, I heard it. I didn't say it was from God or anything. I just said, I heard it. Something's telling me to tell you this. And I didn't say it out loud. I said it in his ear. And he just immediately cried. And he confessed himself. I didn't make him confess. I never said, go confess to everybody. I never said that.
Sure.
But, It's so very, I didn't realize how sexist it was. Like, if I were to wear the, I wore the earrings, I told you, and they
Right.
were small.
Sure.
I was interrogated, whole meeting.
Wow.
What size are you going to go up to? You can only go up at this size. Now, this is a male talking to me about being a woman. And I said, just succinctly, I said, no disrespect, but you don't know nothing about being a woman. You have no idea. I'm going to continue to wear my earrings. And then when I wore the lipstick, oh God, I was going to catch cancer. I was going to die. I was,
Right.
oh my goodness. It was this whole ordeal. Whole big, oh, and oh. And I think I started wearing nails. When nails first came out, the acrylic nails,
Oh yeah,
oh
right.
my God, I was going straight there
No.
with flames, with
Sure.
gasoline drawers on. I was going. I was out of there. I was done.
Well.
And it's just so very, I just, I wanted to say, well, I said all that because I wanted people to know, audience, if it doesn't make you feel good, if somebody makes you feel uncomfortable about who you are and what you're wearing,
Right.
then it's time. It's not time to talk to them, and I mean it.
Yeah,
Walk right out
absolutely.
the door. Just get going. It's not the place for you. It's not. It's not. God is accepting of everyone. And maybe we should go back to no organized religions in churches, but go out in the fields and hang out in the fields, and we could do some hiking. We could do some, all that
Ah.
stuff. That's church to me.
Well,
That's church, being around people
yeah.
like that.
And I'll tell you, Edna, this is the perfect time for me to plug what I do. I'm going to be shameless here. So
Go ahead.
I got a certification in ecotherapy from
Okay.
the Earth Institute in Berkeley, California. And so when I do mental health sessions, many times I'll go outside on my 6-acre farm with my patients, and
Oh,
we'll
that's
talk about
beautiful.
milking the goats or feeding the alpaca that we have, and again,
Okay.
interacting with animals and nature. And you would be amazed at the ease at which conversations come out, especially with our
That's,
young in that natural
yes.
setting, sitting around a
Yeah.
fire versus
Yeah.
sitting in a cold clinical office with someone with a clipboard talking about their feelings.
Absolutely. I 100% agree.
Yeah.
Outside, unconventionally,
Right.
even when I have life, I love to canoe, so I live by the
Oh,
lake
that's
and I
great.
love to canoe. So my clients, they'll say, we're going canoeing today and we'll
Yeah.
talk just rowing, just like, and it's like the best thing.
Right.
It's
I
the best thing. It's the
the
best thing.
practice I created is called Wild Ohio Therapy Farm. It can be found on
Love it.
Facebook. And that's what I
Okay.
do. And that's how I find peace. It's how I
Love
find
it.
healing, and it's how I find calm.
Yes.
And that's what I
Yes.
try to teach the patients who come here.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you already gave us information. I have to have you back because I want to do something in 2024 called Unchurched. You're coming back
Love it,
because
love it.
you're the one. Like I was telling my friend before we got on, I was like, I think he's the one. He's I want to do this thing called Unchurched. She goes,
Right.
Unchurched. Oh, Edna, you're gonna turn heads. I said, that's right. Hey, we
That's
come
okay.
here.
That's okay.
We come here to break up what they are, the fallow ground, as it were. We
That's
come here
right.
to do that. That's what we're here for. So if we connect that way, yeah.
Sure.
But audience, I know that I'm loving Daniel already. Dan, you can call him Dan, but I love him. I love what you do. I'm
Thank you.
excited to see, everyone like just break free from religion and be who they
Sure.
are. And I know that you're the catalyst to that.
Well,
Is
thank you
there
so
anything
much
that you could
for.
tell our audience? Last words. Just tell our audience last words. Last words.
Yeah, I think be kind to yourself and kind to others. And anything that tells you differently, question it.
Yes. So
Be kind to yourself.
we'll have Dan back on again, but thank you for this information. We know to look you up. Your website, you gave the website, give it again.
www.wildohiotherapyfarm.com.
That's beautiful. So get yourself there or even find him virtually because I know he may do virtual
Sure.
sessions as well. But we thank you. I know the audience is probably going to have a whole lot of questions, and I got your email, so I'll send them straight to you.
Love it. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. And this has been really an enlightening session. And for me, I know for me, my audience is going to love it. But wonderful. Thank you so much. And we will be in touch.
That sounds great.
Bye for now.
Thanks, Edna.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
We're reconsidering everything right now. What is time post-COVID? What is truth in Trump's America? Is You've Got Mail secretly a movie about a creepy gaslighting stalker? We can't answer the first two questions, but we have opinions about the third. We on Hot and Bothered are revisiting romance movies of the past and asking, what were these movies teaching us? What did we not even realize they were teaching us? Hot and Bothered is me, Vanessa Zoltan, a pop culture critic and nice lady with opinions, and Hannah McGregor, a bona fide professor of media studies, loving love stories, and also just a little bit concerned. Come listen to Hot and Bothered.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The holidays are about giving something truly special. I'm Martha Stewart, and I believe the best gifts aren't just beautiful. They're useful every single day. Lennox has brought timeless beauty and lasting quality to our tables for generations. And their Lennox Spice Village is the perfect holiday gift for someone you love or for yourself. It's more than a spice rack. It's a charming collection of hand-painted houses that turn ordinary spices into extraordinary experiences. Imagine cinnamon from a tiny Victorian cottage or oregano from a pastel townhouse. Suddenly, a simple meal becomes a moment to savor. Because spices can be more than ingredients. They can inspire memories, warmth, and joy all year long. Give a gift that lasts beyond the holidays. Discover the collection at lennox.com/spicevillage.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.